I'd like to share a few poems I wrote back in 2013 at just about this time of year. I was still in seminary, and I spent most of my weekends at my desk or on the couch studying. But on this particular Sunday afternoon, Karen, my wife, had dragged me away from my books and taken me to Huntley Meadows, a big wetlands area down by Alexandria. As we walked around the park, I found myself composing haiku in my head, even though I'd never written haiku before. In fact, I hadn't written any poetry for maybe 10 years. But here's a small sample of what I wrote. O wetland prophets, singing of our redemption, Sabbath song of frogs. A snapping turtle, disembodied by the mud, but fully present. Theology? Bah! Give me bird song or frog song. Baptize me with mud. Walking around the park that morning, seeing the frogs and turtles and herons and red-winged blackbirds, it jarred something loose in my soul. It dawned on me how much I'd been missing in my life because of my work and studies. It was like I had lost connection with something sacred. And I think that's why I started writing haiku, because the haiku as a form is closely associated with the natural world. We all know that haiku is, you know, five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. But one of the other rules is that the first or third line should always include either, basically should include a natural reference, usually a seasonal reference. And so writing haiku gave voice to my longing for reconnection. Reconnection with the pulse of life in the world all around me. And I remember that morning each year in April now, when Earth Day approaches. Earth Day this year is April 22nd. Now, Earth Day has become an important time for raising awareness about environmental issues. In the coming weeks, we'll hear a lot of talk about changes that should be made to our nation's laws and regulations, and talk about changes that we should make to our lifestyles. And this is important stuff. We need to stay abreast of the latest environmental science, and we need to get a deeper understanding of the policy issues. And without a doubt, we need to make changes to our lifestyle. But I truly believe that before we can make a real change in our society, something needs to change in our hearts. We need a different way of seeing, a different way of seeing ourselves in relation with nature. Now, don't get me wrong, when it comes to environmental consciousness, we've come a long ways. Throughout much of the 20th century, we showed little regard for how our actions affected the natural world, and consequently, we wiped out countless number of plant and animal species, and we altered the environment for good. We're more enlightened now thanks to environmental scientists and activists. We've begun to understand the damage we've done in the natural world. And we've begun to understand that when we hurt the environment, we actually hurt ourselves. And in the Unitarian Universalist tradition, this new way of thinking was reflected in the adoption of a new principle in 1985. The seventh principle, which affirms respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So that's all good. I mean, so much has changed in our lifetimes. But I don't think we're there yet. We might be there intellectually. We get the science behind the web of existence. We can affirm that. But I don't think that many of us are there in our hearts. Even if we feel a great love for the natural world, many of us still see ourselves as being separate from it. Nature is something that we find in our gardens or in the parks. Nature is something that we visit or something that we save. It's something outside ourselves, apart from ourselves. And I actually became aware of this tendency in myself when I read someone claim that the universe is conscious. In fact, it's self-conscious. And when I first read that, I thought, sounds a little New Agey to me. But then the writer explained that the universe is conscious because we are conscious. And we're part of the universe. Through us, the universe thinks about itself. Steve, does that make sense? Yeah, he's nodding. But do you see what I mean? We need a different way of seeing. Above all, we need to see ourselves as flesh and blood creatures rooted in the rhythms of the earth, just like the frogs and the herons and the red-winged blackbirds. Because this is what we are, biologically speaking. It's easy to forget because of the technology that we've developed. We've developed light that holds off darkness. We have heating and cooling that defies the weather. We've developed planes, trains, and automobiles that defy geography. But it's still difficult to beat our biology. One example of that is what's called social jet lag. Have you heard about this? It's a relatively recent term. Okay, so jet lag. You know what jet lag is, of course. You make a long trip and your internal clock kind of gets out of sync with the external clock. So you're in California, the clock says 7 p.m., the sun may even be up, but you're starting to nod off. Okay, that's jet lag. Well, social jet lag is like that, except for it doesn't involve travel. Instead, our internal clock gets out of sync with the external clock because of our work life, our school life, our social life. Often we will run ourselves ragged during the week and then crash on the weekend. We alternate between sleep deprivation and sleep binging. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Yes? That is not how our bodies are programmed to work. And this is not just a matter of habit. Like nearly every living being, we really do have a biological clock, what's known as the circadian system, and it is tied to changes in sunlight and darkness. And this clock works at the cellular level, and it plays a critical role in maintaining a lot of our biological systems. And to keep the clock working properly, we need to keep in rhythm with the rising in the setting of the sun. And if we don't, it really takes a toll on our bodies. This is what scientists have been studying. The social jet lag leads to high blood pressure, weight gain, and all sorts of other health concerns. We need to recognize that we are flesh and blood. No matter how good our technology, our well-being is still tied to the turning of the planet. But this isn't just about physical well-being. When we cut ourselves off from the natural world, when we cut ourselves off from the rhythms of the earth, we lose a vital source of wisdom about the nature of our lives. I've really seen things differently since my time at Huntley Meadows. My wife and I live in a townhouse that backs to a large park, and we take a walk there at least once a week, and we've been doing that for years. But now more than ever, I really pay attention to what's going on around me. And that's really rewarding at this time of year. In spring, we see a succession of wildflowers, spring beauties, bloodroots, mayapples, trout lilies, and now the bluebells, just beautiful. And actually, the cover of the order of service, that is a bloodroot. I took that picture on the path just behind our house. In recent years, I've really come to appreciate the rhythm of spring. Each flower, group of flowers, they show up in their own time. They last for just a little while, and then they're gone. You know, we tend to think of spring as a time in which life runs rampant, a time in which life is teeming all around us. But if we pay attention, we also see that life is fleeting. We learn both to savor it while it lasts and then to let it go. And we learn that same lesson from the larger rhythms of the year with the changing of the seasons. Years ago, I got a cookbook called A Year in the Vegetarian Kitchen. And the recipes, it actually took me a little while to figure this out, but the recipes are actually organized by the seasons, with each season focused on ingredients that are typically available at that time of year. So spring now, that would involve a lot of leeks, peas, artichokes, fennel. In the coming months, it'll turn to tomatoes and corn, and of course in fall, lots of squashes. And I'm embarrassed to say that before I really started reading this cookbook, I hadn't thought about vegetables as having seasons. Most of vegetables are available in our grocery stores year-round, you know, because of shipping technology. You know, maybe certain vegetables aren't available here now, but they're available in Mexico, and so we just ship them. It's another case of technology trying to trump biology. But it doesn't quite work, does it? If we want, we can eat fresh tomatoes year-round. But how fresh are they after being transported 1,000 miles? Not very, as I once learned the hard way. One of my favorite recipes that I make every summer, is a tomato and bread soup with caramelized leeks. And I pretty much named almost every ingredient in it. It's a very simple dish that calls for fresh tomatoes. It really calls for that flavor that only comes with very fresh tomatoes. It's a wonder. But one summer, I got a little antsy. And before tomato season here, I decided I wanted to make tomato and bread soup. And so I went and bought some fresh tomatoes that were not local. And I won't make that mistake again. It just wasn't the same. Now when I make that soup, usually just one time each summer, I savor it all the more because I know that tomato season is fleeting. Tomato season is fleeting, and that soup tastes great. Then it's gone. Of course, there are health benefits that come from eating local seasonal produce. And that's because once produce has been picked, it actually begins to lose its nutrients. And so the longer the time between the picking of the produce and the eating, the less nutritional value there is in the food. So there's that. But for me, the real benefit from understanding local produce, from understanding the real seasons of the year, the real benefit comes from falling into the rhythm of the seasons, from learning to appreciate each season in its turn, to appreciate the one season and then to let it go, and then to embrace the next. It's easy to embrace spring in summer. But we're invited to embrace each season in its turn, and then letting one go and embracing the next. This is the idea behind the slow food movement, which began in the 1980s. It's a response to both large-scale commercial food production and to the fast food industry. The idea is to focus on preparing food that is both regional and seasonal. But over the years, that movement has actually given rise to a more general slow philosophy. Carl Honoré, who's given a TED Talk on the topic, describes it this way. The slow philosophy is not about doing everything at a snail's pace. It's about seeking to do everything at the right speed, savoring the hours and minutes rather than just counting them, doing everything as well as possible instead of as fast as possible. It's about quality over quantity in everything from work to food to parenting. Savoring the hours and minutes rather than just counting them. It sounds ideal, doesn't it? But I also know how difficult it is. We all have a lot going on in our lives between work, family, health concerns, and everything else. It can be difficult to remember to slow down and savor what life has to offer. This is how Earth Day can help us. By reminding us that we are creatures of the earth, that our lives are rooted in the rhythms of the earth. Earth Day reminds us to honor that connection by savoring the life that is all around us. The natural world is not background scenery or tourist destination. It is an interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This is a very different way of seeing. Hear once again the words of Black Elk. Then I was standing on the highest mountain of them all, and round beneath me was the whole hoop of the world. And while I stood there, I saw more than I can tell, and I understood more than I saw. For I was seeing in a sacred manner the shape of all things in the spirit, and the shape of all shapes as they must live together like one being. And I saw that the sacred hoop of my people was one of many hoops that made one circle, wide as daylight and as starlight. And in the center grew one mighty flowering tree to shelter all the children of one mother and one father. And I saw that it was holy. May this be our vision. May we really see that we are part of a vast interdependent web of all existence. And may we see that it is holy. And may we savor this life for as long as it lasts. May it be so. Amen.